Welcome to Arkansas Cooks. This is your host, Mary Tweet, and I'm here to meet and eat with Arkansas cooks, and then I tell you all about it. Last week, we learned about the food in the Arkansas Delta and its savory history. Well, this week, I continue my talk with Cindy Grisham. Don't go away. You're listening to Arkansas Cooks. Good afternoon. I am Mary Tweet, and you are listening to Arkansas Cooks. Last week, I started this talk with Cindy Grisham, and we could have talked for days. It was amazing. She wrote a book all because of a conversation she had with the folks in the Delta, and it really started over a plate of biscuits. She was going to school at ASU, and she was a history major, and it just blossomed into this book. It is a book called The Savory History of Arkansas Delta Food. And I thought it was fantastic. So my conversation with Cindy started last week, and it's going to continue right now. We are planning a huge road trip. I can't wait. So here's the continuation of my conversation with Cindy Grisham and the savory history of the Arkansas Delta food.
Sisters and nieces and cousins. It's just a big family thing. And it really is like going to dinner with your family because it's great. We used to tell people who would come to visit the museum, they said, well, is there a place to eat in town? Well, yeah, there's a little restaurant down the street. It's not marked. There's no sign or anything outside, but it's the third door down. And now they may be a little bit grumpy, but it's okay. You know, just think of it like your grandma or something. And that's kind of the way they are. They're yelling at each other, and they're bickering sometimes, and it's just fun. It's
but
just
they
like
have
going
a restaurant.
Oh, absolutely. It's just like going, you know, to you know, dinner with your aunts that fight all the time, you know, because they're like, what are you doing? You know, it's just fabulous. So once you get used to it, it's great.
Yeah.
And people would come in and stay 2 or 3 hours watching the sisters go.
That's in Tyronza.
Yeah, in Tyronza, yeah.
Okay.
And they're really fun.
Now, I love that you have this in your book, by the way, the appendix, because you have listed all the restaurants, the Feedlot in Caraway, and then Clara's in Tyronza, and then you also have Atkins City Cafe in Parkin, the Trolley Stop Market, which was interesting. That was really interesting in Memphis.
They're in Memphis, yeah. They live in... officially, they live in Witten, but that's a Tyronza post office. So,
okay.
Yeah.
And then you have a Ty Boogie's.
And Ty Boogie's is not open yet. They're still working on it. That's the same people. That's Keith and Jill Forrester, who are just the greatest couple in the world. They're probably in their late 20s. They were school teachers who ended up on his grandparents' farm. They got the house and a few acres around where the horse pasture was. They didn't get the row crop land. And Jill looks out across the road, and she tells Keith for her birthday she wants a pound of zinnia seed and a pound of sunflower seed planted across the road in that field so she can look out and see flowers every day. And he's very obliging, so he plants her this pound of each. And you can imagine how many flowers she
ended
up
with.
That's a lot. Yeah. And she cut flowers. She gave flowers away. She had flowers everywhere. And finally loads up some 5-gallon buckets of flowers and takes them to the Memphis Farmers Market and comes home $400 wealthier at the end of the day and says, I think I can make a living at this. And the next year they planted tomatoes, and it sort of grew from there. And now they have a restaurant, a canning kitchen that's open to the public to use. So if there are any other local folks who need a commercial kitchen to make jelly or salsa or whatever they want to sell, they can rent their kitchen.
At the trolley stop?
At the trolley. It's actually at Witten. It's out in Arkansas. It's at their farm. They converted their greenhouses from bedding plants to microgreens, and they grow greens year-round. So in January, they can go out and cut arugula and take it to the chefs in Memphis. They have a CSA, community-supported agriculture, so they have about 400 families.
We need to take a road trip.
Oh, we do. You would love these guys. They are great. That'd be fantastic. They have bought the old Taranza store, the old Taranza grocery store.
And that's going to be Thai Boogies.
That's going to be Thai Boogies, and they're going to turn that into a restaurant. And they don't look at it as competition with Clara. They think there's enough room for both of them. And I think they're probably right.
Well, they are right.
And they're focusing primarily on their fresh produce and locally grown meats and honey. They have a whole list of local farmers that they buy
with all their flowers
and all their flowers, and they also support local artists and things like that. They're going to put an ice cream stand in there, so it's all going to be great. And it's right next to the city park, so they're thinking festivals and things like that too.
So much fun,
and they're just wonderful folks.
And then you've got the Dixie Pig in Blytheville, uh-huh. the Cream Castle in Blytheville. Mm-hmm. And Johnson's Freeze Inn, that's got to be an ice cream joint.
Johnson's Freeze Inn.
Arkansas.
There's actually three Johnson's in Wynn. Johnson's Freeze Inn, which is the ice cream stand. Johnson's.
Little Johnson's.
Little Johnson's and Big Johnson's.
And Johnson's Fish House.
Yeah, Johnson's Fish House is called Big Johnson's, and that's actually the sit-down restaurant. And Little Johnson's is the barbecue stand. And it's downtown across the railroad tracks in this little trailer. And they close it in the summertime because they don't want to roast the employees. Because it just gets really hot in the barbecue stand. But they serve fish, they serve barbecue. The best barbecue I think maybe I've ever tasted.
Wow.
And
In Wynn.
And they do their barbecue. The only seasoning they use is black pepper.
Wow.
And they totally coat the outside of the meat in black pepper, and they slow cook that. And it's wonderful.
And then also Woody's Barbecue, uh-huh. and then which is in Waldenburg, and then Bill Teague's Grocery in Truman.
Yeah, Bill Teague has had barbecue for years and caters and runs just a little grocery store. And Woody's is a roadside barbecue place. It's open 3 days a week, in a camper trailer behind the convenience store at the corner in Waldenburg, population 70.
Love it.
Yeah. But what I love about Waldenburg is that it has Woody's, it has Josie's, which is a little ice cream stand. No, see. That's not it. Josie's is the restaurant. It has like four restaurants and it's 70 people.
In
Waldenburg. It's nothing but food. And then there's another place called Miss Bill's Lunch Wagon now, which is another little camper,
She
sells food out of the camper. And I'm like, man, you gotta love these people. There's like nobody out here. This is west of the ridge. This is the rice country. And it's just this flat, flat rice as far as you can see. And all roads lead to Waldenburg
and food.
And you can get anything you want in Waldenburg.
So we are gonna have to take a road trip. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about this one in Chapter 3, because I was with a group of young people, young, like 26, 27, mm-hmm. 28, yeah. and one of them had been on an organic farm, and I talked about the mother corn and her sisters, the mm-hmm. three sisters, mm-hmm. and I said, this is the most fascinating thing I've ever read about the mother and her three sisters talking about planting corn and beans and squash, and she said, we learned that on the organic farm. Mm-hmm. You plant the corn, mm-hmm. which has nutrients in it and the beans climb up the corn, mm-hmm. and the squash is on the ground and loves the nutrients that are in the corn and beans.
Right,
the beans. And then eat them together.
Right, yeah, and if you eat them together, because corn really isn't food. It is not food. But if you eat it with beans and squash, then you get a complete meal.
Isn't that? I thought that was so fascinating.
Yeah, and we did it. I worked for a time at Park and Archaeological State Park, and because it wasn't, that's a Mississippian era Native American village, we thought, this is the perfect thing. And the only place we really had, we were fighting Bermuda grass, and you can't fight Bermuda grass. So we had this triangular shaped raised bed in front of the visitor center that we put our garden in, and it was great. But I really had to learn how to do it. I thought, you just go out and plant it all at the same time. And I realized found out that if you don't let your corn get a certain height, that the beans will literally strangle it.
Right. So you have to let them get up.
Yeah,
you
have to let
them high, isn't it?
You say about 6 inches. Make sure that they're up about 2 weeks, and then you can plant the beans. But then you have to watch them because they will, you know, choke everything down. But we were really careful picking what we, you know, the oldest varieties we could possibly find. And we grew a blue and white corn that was just great. And it was cool because it got smut. And I don't know if you've ever seen corn smut. It's the nastiest looking thing you've ever seen. But it basically is a fungal disease that affects the corn and turns the kernels into a mushroom. So you had this ear of corn that exploded and looked like blue mushrooms. Horrible.
Could you eat it?
Oh, yeah. It's great. Because what happens...
I did not know
it changes the chemical composition of the kernel of corn. And it makes it healthier. And the ancient the Inca or the Aztec would actually slash the stalks of their corn to encourage smut.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
And when I saw it, I'm thinking, what the heck has happened to my corn? What is on this? I mean, because it literally, the ear just looked like it exploded. And it's this big, blue, knotty stuff that's, oh gosh, the size of a quarter. Each kernel had turned the size of a quarter and was blue and was gross. And I'm thinking, that's smut. And I remember seeing a show about it, this article, this man wanted to grow corn smut as a cash crop because, you know, it was actually healthier for you. And his neighbors, who were also corn farmers, fought him, and he lost a lawsuit. They wouldn't let him do it because they didn't want to infect their corn. And most hybrid corns will not smut because they've been, you know, but
it's too
the
hybrid.
Older varieties will smut for you. And so when we figured out what it was, and I'm like, yeah, it is corn smut, I took it home, and I made myself a corn smut omelet for lunch. And the ladies back at the park were like, are you feeling all right? You didn't eat that, did you? And I'm like, yeah, I ate it. Are you feeling all right? And I'm like, every 10 minutes, how do you feel? I'm fine. You know, it's okay. And then I later saw Bobby Flay on the Food Network cooking corn smut. So it's okay. You can actually get it canned. It's really gross looking canned. But yeah.
But it tastes good.
It tastes like a mushroom, a corn mushroom, if you can imagine
like
that. Sort of an earthy,
kind of a nutty corn, taste on it.
Yeah, taste, and it is really good.
I'll be darned.
And you know, again, those Native Americans who, you know, we tend to have thought of as savages and ignorant people, figured out it's actually better for you, and they would eat it instead of the corn. And then of course they learned how to do the nixtamalization process, which turns it into hominy, which actually again changes the chemical composition of the corn and makes it healthy for you. So
isn't that interesting?
Yeah,
because I'm a huge fan of I've never met a grit I didn't like.
No joke.
Hey, so here's the chapters are divided. You've got this beginning, which you do a beautiful job, I think, of really talking about the other delta and the natural state of food. But then you talk about the mother corn and her sisters, the beans and the squash. You talk about barbecue in one chapter, beans, greens, and maters in one chapter, Irish potatoes, sweet potatoes, and rice. Mm-hmm. You talk about gravy. But I want to go to my favorite chapter, which is probably everybody's favorite chapter, Chapter 8, which is all about pies.
Pies, yes.
Yeah, and you know, I came down here and had not had fried pies.
Mm-hmm.
Fried pies seem to me to be very southern, you know, and very Arkansas for me, especially in the Delta, because it was easier to make a fried pie than it was to make an entire pie for somebody.
It's easier to carry.
Yeah,
take
much
it to
easier.
The field with you, which is the same way tamales gained popularity, because that's how you kept your lunch warm.
Yeah.
Tamale won't get cold real fast. So a fried pie was easier to carry into the field than a whole pie. And yeah, fried pies kind of are a Delta specialty. I didn't go heavily into pies because I've got a friend who has written a book on pie.
Kat Robinson.
Kat
I've interviewed
book,
Kat.
Yeah,
she does a fine pie book.
Does a fine pie book. And she hit pie, and I said, she's done pie, so I'll touch on it because you got to have pie.
But I liked your vinegar pie. I thought that was really interesting.
Vinegar pie is cool. It's good.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a lemon pie. And that was, again, like we were talking about sour gravy.
Right.
That was a stand-in for lemon.
I love that you've got a picture of Clara in here.
Clara makes the best coconut cream pie.
That's what it sounded like in this little intro
about
Clara.
And only her sister knows how to make it.
She and her sister.
No, just her sister. She doesn't know how to make it.
She doesn't?
No.
But her sister makes it for her.
Her sister makes it for her. Yeah. And her brother-in-law makes the pecan pie. And he comes in every Friday and makes those. And they sell extra pies over the weekend.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, pie, pie's a good chapter for me. Now, Elise at Caraway very rarely has pie. She's in the pie book, and she makes a good pie, but she makes cake. Cake is her thing. And I'm not against cake either.
Cake is okay.
Cake is good. But pie, every place, you know, you're going to have pie is almost always a staple with it. It includes pie.
Right.
It's not an extra. I think it includes pie.
I was going to say, it's always an extra. I mean, it's always added to a lot of meals, and when you see them in diners, whatever. Now, you did a wild game, fish and fowl, and you kept pork separate.
Mm-hmm.
What I noticed is you didn't do any beef.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just not a lot of beef up there, is there? It's usually either it's game or it's pork.
Or it's pork. Yeah. Beef, you know, many, many years ago, they would do beef. But beef was one of those things. I mean, it was the original barbecue in the South. And I talked about Mary John, who was the slave who bought her freedom.
I thought that
doing
was a
barbecue.
Great story.
I think Arkansas needs a barbecue award, the Mary John Award.
Oh, that would be great.
You know, because, I mean, what a great story she is. But, they did beef. It was barbecued, long, slow barbecue times because the beef was so tough. Pork was pretty much what everybody had. It was easier to keep it. It was easier to do things with it. You didn't have to have refrigeration to keep pork. You do with beef. Beef has to be eaten fast.
Yeah.
And, you know, everything I would find would talk about the fact that if someone killed, a cow and they butchered it, they were running around the neighborhood selling it to the neighbors because, you know, there was no way to preserve it. So you had beef that night, maybe the next day, and all the neighbors had beef, but you couldn't keep it. But
they didn't have freezers.
No.
They had an ice box,
right.
But it was pretty small, right?
Right, yeah. And you know, it just wouldn't keep. So, but pork. Pork can be smoked. Pork can be cured. You know, there's all kinds
of
ways to keep pork.
Yeah.
Right. There's all kinds of ways to do it, and you don't have to keep it in the refrigerator. It can hang out wherever. So pork is primarily, that's the big meat of the Delta, like you said, other than game. Fish is big. And I heard a great story from one of the ladies at Parkin, actually Dolores Atkins, with Atkins City Cafe, and they're a barbecue place there in Parkin, but telling me about gar.
And
gar are such huge fish.
Huge.
And you can't.
And we call it, they're kind of trash fish.
Yeah. And actually, Faye, my friend Faye, that I talk to in here and talk about, was going to cook me gar gravy. And she insisted I was going to love it, going to love the gar gravy. You fry the fish, and then you take the fish out, you make the gravy, then put the fish back in and get it really hot and eat it with cornbread. She said, there's nothing better. We couldn't find a gar. It was the wrong time of year. But anyway, we're talking about gar and the fact that there's so much of it. And Dolores says, what we would do with our extra gar meat was we would grind it up like sausage, and we'd season it up just like pork sausage, and then wrap it up in corn husk and tie it off and hang it up and let it dry. And then when we needed sausage, we would just take it down and unwrap it and fry it. And
isn't that crazy?
I heard that when I would mention it to other people, and I heard it from several people who would tell me the same thing. That's how they use gar, and they made gar sausage. Gar sausage. I mean, who
would have thought that?
Yeah.
Out of fish.
Out of fish, yeah. So we've decided we've got to get a gar this year, and we're going to take it out to the park at Parkin, and we're going to, do the gar thing, because I learned with a gar, you don't butcher, you don't clean a gar like you do most things. They have this big scaly back, and you have to beat the gar. I remember hearing this the first time. You have to beat the fish. You have to beat the fish, okay.
Is it already dead?
It's already dead, yeah, and they pull it up on like some kind of swing set frame, generally, is what they use, or some kind of motor frame for where they work on car motors, and they take a stick or some kind of, heavy thing, and they beat on the back of the fish. And it causes the meat to separate from the skeleton.
Oh!
And then they just run their hand up the skeleton and it comes loose.
That is crazy.
Yeah, so I said, that's a whole thing we got to look at. So we're going to get a
gar.
We're going to hang it up. We're going to beat the fish and we're going to cook
some gar.
Well,
can't you imagine too, though? That was entertainment.
It was. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Just like, barbecues were entertainment, and hog killings were almost entertainment. I mean, they weren't. They were horrible, hard work, and you know, cold, nasty times. But, you know, it was. Everybody came together. You did all this stuff as a group, and then you ate.
Right.
And that was the best part. So, and you had all your fresh stuff, and you got your hams ready and your sausage, and did everything you needed to do to get you through the winter. So you would have meat. And so, bear was, what I learned was that bear was done the same way.
As
pork. You
really?
Treat bear exactly the same way as pork. It's not like beef, it's like pork. You can cure it, you can smoke it. And that's why bear was so popular. Number one, there were lots of bears, but number two, you could be treated exactly like pork.
I did not know that.
I didn't either.
Now, I think this is interesting with the, you have this whole, you know, wild game and fish and fowl. Mm-hmm. I've never been a wild game fan. Mm-hmm. I have eaten duck that has been superb. I've eaten duck that was not great. Mm-hmm. You know, I think that everybody's had that experience. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had great venison. I've had not so great venison.
Right.
I've had gamey this. I've had, and I've never had raccoon. I've eaten squirrel before. I've had good squirrel. I've had gamey squirrel.
Right.
You know, and I think that's so interesting that you've included these recipes, but they really use in the Delta, once again, whatever they could get.
Mm-hmm.
Raccoons, squirrels, you know.
Rabbits especially. Yeah. I hear lots of stories about the Depression and rabbits. And I don't know, and I've kind of done a little bit of research, and I can't remember exactly what the thing was, but there was like this massive influx of rabbits during the Depression. And in places like Texas, they would literally like beat the rabbits to death. They'd herd them together and beat them to death because the rabbits were taking over everything. And I guess because they multiply so fast, but it was a prime source of meat in the Delta during the Depression. They had this thing called Hoover hash that was rabbit hash. And because everything, you know, poor food was always Hoover or whatever.
Yeah.
They had Hoover sandwiches, were like turnip sandwiches, which is like two slices of turnip with a slice of turnip in the middle, you know.
That was a Hoover sandwich.
Yeah, it was a Hoover sandwich.
Okay, so if we were going to take a road trip,
mm-hmm.
where would we start? Would we start in Tyrenza, or would we start over in...
Well, if you're going to start with... I guess if you're going to start with the places I list in the book, yeah, probably you would want to start in Tyrenza. Although Dolores and Milton make a really good breakfast down at Parkin. And Wynn is closer if you're coming from Little Rock, so I don't know.
We might start in Wynn. Well, we might have to make it 2 days.
Yeah, you might, because you have to go back and you have to hit everything. You have to eat a lot of food, is what I'm going to tell you. Because you're going to have to eat.
We'll have to bring some people with us.
Yeah, you will.
Yeah. I could do that.
And again, there's lots of great places that I did not get to. These were just people that I knew, I talked to on a regular basis, and it was easy for me because, like I said, I gave myself a short time frame on this. But lots of other places. There's a great place called Uncle John's in Crawfordsville, which Crawfordsville has a heavy Italian population. They are primarily an Italian restaurant, but they make some of the best catfish. I mean, people come over from Memphis to eat catfish. People drive up from Memphis to Tyrenza to eat catfish.
Wow.
They do quail on Thursday night at Tyrenza. People drive up for that. So, yeah, it's just, I don't know. You probably just have to go spend a week.
I probably do.
Yeah.
I probably do. You also have in here food producers, mm-hmm. and some other points of interest, like the Windermager's Farm,
uh-huh.
and Arkansas Delta Made, which is, I'm sure, a website that has Delta Made things.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought you did a great job on resources in this.
Thank you.
So it's if you want to discover food in the Delta, this is the book to
right.
buy.
And it's not the end-all be-all. It's not, you know, it's certainly not everybody. It's just
but it's a
really
nice start.
Yeah, it's a really small collection, and just, you know, my advice is go spend a week, drive from town to town, find out where the locals eat. That's always the best place, and it's going to be just food, you know, just your typical home cooking. But you know, you're going to get the best feel for what a place is like, what a town is like, going to those places, and those are the places that everyone eventually, you know, makes their way to. Really, the reason so.
Well, thank you so much. This has been a treat, and we will. What I'd love to do is take a road trip with you up there just to visit a couple of these places, because
okay.
they sound so, I mean, so interesting.
Well, we'll go. Let's do it.
Let's do it. All right. Thank you so much.
feel, I feel like a catfish swimming at the dark in the sea. I have no more worries on my little girl looking out after me, looking out after me, looking out after me, looking out after me. Well, I'm broke, baby, I'm hungry, baby, I'm ready now, 32. But if I clean up, this mama can out.
We're back. I'm Mary Tweed, and this is Arkansas Cooks. You can find out more about Cindy Grisham and her book, The Savory History of Arkansas Delta Food, on my website at arkansascooks.com. If you're interested in writing me, you can also do that at arkansascooks.com or mary@arkansascooks.com. And the stuff that I get is always fantastic. You can find me at Facebook, at Arkansas Cooks on Facebook. And you can look at my website at arkansascooks.com. Well, that's all the time we have today for Arkansas Cooks. Thanks for tuning in. I want to thank Cindy Grisham for sharing with us all of her history about the food in the Arkansas Delta. It was fantastic. Also, thanks to Travis Hill. He makes me sound so good. This is Mary Tweet reminding all you Arkansas cooks out there, life is way too short to eat bad food. So only eat great food, and eat it with great people that you love. It'll taste so much better.